Welcome. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And this is James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. And we both welcome you back to another jam-packed episode of The New World next week, which, of course, as always, you can find all the information, all the sources cited, all the notes, everything you need, audio, video, and more at NewWorldNextWeek.com. James, there will be nary a mention of the upcoming presidential selections here in the United States or the Frankenstorm, Superstorm, Sandy. But I think as we look at stories around the world, I think in a way they can kind of shed a light. It's all relative. We'll begin, James, with a story that we'll take from Reuters, but it will lead us around as it gets deep, as you were even discussing before we started to roll tape, that it gets bigger and bigger the more you look at it. Poland denies explosives found on wreck of crashed jet. Polish prosecutors denied a newspaper report that investigators found traces of explosives on the wreckage of the government jet that crashed in Russia 2 years ago, killing Poland's president, Lech Kaczynski, and 95 others. The Polish daily newspaper said on Tuesday that investigators who examined the remains of the plane in Russia found signs of TNT and nitroglycerin on the wings and in the cabin, including on 30 of the seats. The report strengthened accusations by rightist groups that investigators ignored evidence of outside involvement and prompted opposition leader Jarosław Kaczynski, the twin brother of Lech, as I mispronounced Leah before, as I'll use this opportunity, I will not attempt to mangle a lot of these Polish names and implore you guys, as always, to go read the information for yourself. The twin brother to call for the government to resign as they ignored evidence. Polish military prosecutors said they were sticking to their finding that the crash was not an assassination and no explosives were found on the remains of the government Tu-154 that crashed during its approach to a small airport near the Russian city of Smolensk on April 10, 2010. It is not true that investigators found evidence of TNT or nitroglycerin, quote-unquote, said a colonel from the military prosecutor's office. Now, James, that's the Reuters report from October 30th. But wait, if we go the day before, October 29th, Russia Today reports that a parliamentary investigation, a Polish parliamentary investigation into President Kaczynski's plane crash in Russia in 2010 is considering witness protection. A flight engineer set to deliver critical testimony was found hanged in his house in Warsaw. As news of the death hit the headlines, the head of the Polish Parliamentary Commission looking into the crash said that the hanged was one of the two key witnesses in the case. So now with him dead, they're basically putting the last key witness or should be put into protective custody. James, what do we make of this?
Well, if it's true that where there's smoke, there's fire, it's probably also true that where there's traces of explosives, there's explosives. Or at the very least, we should be looking into this. And the latest suicide, supposedly, of this critical witness is just another twist in an investigation that has been really, really quite fascinating. And I must admit that I myself am only really starting to dig into this at the moment. There's so much to really explore with this, but there's definitely something very suspicious about all of this. And for an excellent source on this, I'm going to point people to a website called doomedsoldiers.com. I'll put the link in the notes for this edition of New World Next Week. And it has an excellent timeline of this crash going back to 2009, talking about some of the events leading up to it, including the fact that the Tu-154 in question, the actual renovation and overhaul of that aircraft was sourced out to a company owned by Oleg Deripaska, who happened to be someone who had been investigated for ties to money laundering and the Russian mafia, and he had his U.S. visa revoked in 2006. The engine overhaul was done by a company owned by Sergei Chemezov, who happened to be a former KGB agent who worked undercover in Dresden and who lives next door to Russian President Vladimir Putin. And when you start to look into the investigation itself and how that came together, it was decided, despite the fact it was a military craft, they were going to use ICAO regulations for the investigation, which means since it happened on Russian soil, Russia would be in charge of the investigation. Medvedev appointed a special counsel to look into it, and who did he appoint to head that special counsel? Vladimir Putin. Oh, yes, the most arm's-length observer of all of this. So there's some very deep ties here, and it goes into all sorts of things. I'm really just getting into the research, the heavy nitty-gritty research of this myself. So let's call on the listeners and viewers out there. If you have any good sources on this, by all means, please direct them to me. I'm probably going to be doing a podcast episode and or radio show or something on all of this research, because it really does start to get very deep very quickly. And I will also plead ignorance of the pronunciation of these Polish names. So when and if you hear me trying to mangle any of them, please forgive me. But absolutely, I hope people are keeping their eye on this story, because I think this is extremely interesting. And especially with this suicide, I think things are going to start getting even more interesting.
James, can we speculate at all of why the president would have been taken out?
One of the theories going around, he was on his way to a ceremony that was honoring a massacre that took place in the Kadan Forest back in 1940 that the USSR had always vehemently denied ever took place. They denied any responsibility for it. 20,000 Polish soldiers were slaughtered by Russian special forces. USSR always denied it, but recently, from what I understand, the Russia has admitted that Stalin, in fact, did order that massacre. So the president was actually on the way to a ceremony to commemorate that, and ended up crashing in the very forest where that massacre took place. Just a crazy, crazy series of events. There are other connections going on. I'm sure it goes deeper than that, but I'm just starting to look into this myself, as I say.
Mm. James, our second story, we leave Poland and head to Canada, where I have this posted to my own foodworldorder.com. Ocean fertilization experiment to make waves at United Nations meeting. British Columbia's geoengineering attracts worldwide attention. We'll take this from the Brandon Sun. Canada may be called onto the carpet this week as nations gather in the United Kingdom to negotiate the terms of an international treaty to regulate the controversial practice of geoengineering. A First Nations salmon restoration group in Haida Gwaii has attracted worldwide attention after dumping more than 100 metric tons of iron into the Pacific Ocean in a process known as ocean fertilization. Many scientists from around the world have condemned the unsanctioned experiment, and the federal government says it is investigating. But Canada is a hotbed of geoengineering, says a watchdog group, and has been involved in similar experiments in the past. Geoengineering is the deliberate modification of the environment as a means of combating climate change, James.
Exactly right. Yes, of course. Well, I see this type of story as part of the dialectic that I think we're being entered into right now, where it's going to be this type of conflict situation between the UN is going to be the body that can oversee these types of things, and they'll be able to give the go-ahead or not. And of course, these rogue researchers will have to be reined in. But of course, it's just going to be part of that. Well, we have to enter this into a process. And once we do that, then we can do these types of experiments in a controlled manner that the whole world can agree on. And of course, the question of whether or not we want this at all ever taking place, or why we would want it taking place, is probably not going to be really delved into too deeply, or if it is, it's going to be entered into that dialectic, so at least the idea gets entered into the public consciousness. Yes, geoengineering is here. Yes, it's real. Yes, people have, scientists have been proposing this for decades now, and really contemplating it for a number of years. But of course, geoengineering in the skies, oh, that's still theoretical, etc., etc. And then this is just the type of story they can use to start to introduce it to the public consciousness. So I think people have to be aware that geoengineering is going on in multiple forms, and it is going to likely have very devastating effects on the environment, and people have to be very much against this in all the forms that it's taking place, and have to resist this whatever type of process it enters into in the UN, whereby it starts to become normalized as part of international relations, that certain researchers can get the UN stamp of approval and go ahead with this, or however they start to regulate this type of activity. I think people have to be very concerned about this, and we'll have to keep our eye on this conference and see what develops from it.
And I think there's recently been chatter about, you know, the United Nations wants to control the internet. So I would say that would segue us into our third and final story, staying in Canada. And this one is posted to my own cyberspacewar.com. The police need new internet surveillance tools, say chiefs, and Bill C-30 would give Canadian police warrantless access to internet communications. From the CBC, the Canadian Association of Police Chiefs is calling on the federal government to pass its controversial internet surveillance bill so police can fight cybercrime more effectively. Association President and Vancouver Police Chief Jim Chu says he is concerned Bill C-30 will die on the order paper, meaning officers investigating criminal activity on cell phones and the internet will still have to get a warrant every time they want to intercept communications by cyber criminals. Law enforcement continues to be handcuffed by legislation introduced in 1975, the days of the rotary telephone, said Chu last Friday morning in Vancouver. Bill C-30 was introduced by Public Safety Minister Vic Tews last winter, February, I believe, of this year, 2012, and was immediately criticized by many groups concerned about the sweeping powers it would give the government to track the ordinary activities of citizens online without judicial oversight. Now, I do have related links to more from the CBC and also from Russia Today and even the Wikipedia entry to read about the Bill C-30, James, which is officially called the Protecting Children from Internet Predators Act, originally titled Lawful Access Act. A Lawful Access Act. Well, that's not going to fly because it obviously isn't. Ooh, let's use the what about the children scare. That will fit the bill, right, James?
I really wish that was actually funny, but unfortunately it's actually true, and they really do think that the public basically are children and will fall for that type of ridiculous doublespeak language. But absolutely, and I do know the pronunciation on this one. It's Vic Tews, and he got into a lot of trouble earlier this year because of a comment that he made: if you're not with this act, then you're with the child pornographers, or something to that effect. It was just such a ridiculous statement. It was immediately parodied and made fun of online, and people basically took him to task for it, so C-30 got shelved. But now they're starting to talk about dredging it up from the depths again, and oh, we need this, so it's going to be so great. And exactly as you indicate, just last week, the UN came out saying that the internet is just too open, and thus terrorists can use it, and thus we need to clamp down on the internet. So unfortunately, this is not an isolated phenomenon in Canada, as you know there in the United States, and people around the world know in their own localities. It is a coordinated agenda that is happening right now to try to establish norms, international norms even, for this type of surveillance and the ways that police can get around all of the traditional ways that they've been held in check by whatever Constitution, Bill of Rights, or Charter of Rights and Freedoms might hold sway in your local country. So again, this is an extremely important issue. I know Canadians don't need to be told that, and people around the world don't need to be told that, but it is important that people remember this issue, because of course we saw the SOPA and PIPA generate so much attention online last year, but where are the people right now? It's still going on. It is a war of attrition, and they're just waiting for people to blink long enough for them to pass legislation like this. So people have to keep vigilant and be aware that this is going to be a fight that is not going to end just because we managed to get rid of SOPA or PIPA or ACTA or CISPA or whatever they come up with next. It is a long-term protracted battle for the very fundamental precept that the internet should remain an open and free place, and that police forces around the world can't just snoop into to people's internet activity, etc., without a criminal warrant and reason to believe that there's something going on. So again, this is a fight that is not limited to Canada. It is something that's happening all around the world, and I hope people in whatever municipality or country or wherever you're living will understand how and when and why it's being implemented in your area as well, and seek to find ways to counteract it.
I just thought this was something they push a lot here in the States. I'm not sure if folks see it in Canada or around the world. There's a lot of and this goes along with the what about the children. The online bullying has become a huge kind of, we have to do something. All this online bullying is leading to just this wave of suicides on, from kids. It's faulty reasoning, just as you noted. James, I think the stories we discussed this week, I think in a way, shine a strange kind of eerie light on, the stories that I see here playing out in the States. When you're looking at, yes, presidents can die in plane crashes. Yes, they are screwing with the environment and blaming it on us. So whether it's selections or Sandy, those specters are in the background for me as we discuss these stories, James.
Unfortunately so. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for today's episode, but we will be back 1 week from now as we start to establish the new routine for New World next week. Hopefully no big disruptions from that. But James, always a pleasure talking to you, and thank you for digging these stories up.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, man. Take care.